Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we will be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshall, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at www.yorkshirepost.co.uk/sport, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at YPSport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@jpimedia.co.uk.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshall. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
So, this week we're going to be having a look at the latest results and the forthcoming fixtures for our teams, as well as the developments within the world of football. First of all, let's start with the season's EFL awards, where our local clubs had pretty good representation in my eyes. Barry Bannon from Sheffield Wednesday takes pride of place, appearing in the League One team of the season, getting the award for the EFL goal of the season and being in the top three for the League One player of the season. Also in the League One team of the season were Michael Ihique, Dan Ballester, and Michael Smith from Rotherham. Sheffield United also won the award for Family Club of the Year with Lee Nichols from Huddersfield Town appeared as goalkeeper in the Championship team of the season. Stuart, do you have any observations on the awards?
Yeah, I mean, very well deserved, first and foremost. I think you mentioned Bannon, and you know he certainly had a great season. It's no surprise. I think we all knew from day one that Barry Bannon was far too good to be in League One. But the one that stood out for me really was Lee Nichols as the goalkeeper of the year in the Football League. I mean, he's had 18 clean sheets so far this season, more than anyone else. And obviously, the clean sheets aren't just down to Lee Nichols. That's an achievement by the whole team. But considering he's 29 years old, this is his first season in the Championship. He was second choice goalkeeper for MK Dons last season. It's been a brilliant piece of business by Huddersfield. I mean, there wasn't a signing of the season award, but he'd have to be right up there. Really, really good work by the recruitment department to identify him. And first and foremost, really good goalkeeping by him, because there's been plenty of games this season where he's been really important to Huddersfield Town. He's brought an assurance to that team, along with the likes of Pearson, Lees, and Colwell, who all came in the summer. He's made them so much more solid. I just think he's been absolutely outstanding this season, and I'm really pleased to see him recognised. You know, it's a shame really that I think Nathan Jones, if I remember rightly, was the manager of the year. It's a shame really that Carlos Corbran wasn't recognised. Certainly Jones has had an excellent season, as has Steve Cooper, Paul Heckingbottom, and a few others. But Corbran's been excellent too. It's a pity that wasn't recognised. And in terms of the three Rotherham lads, very well deserved. Certainly Ihique and Barlays have had a lively old week since we last spoke. They've scored at both ends, each of them in a game each. But Michael Smith's another one who's had a wonderful season. The strikers tend to get the recognition anyway. He's had a couple of Player of the Month awards, but he certainly deserves his place in that team. And him and Bannon were both unfortunate to miss out for the top award of Player of the Year. But particularly
the
Nichols.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much echo all that. I mean, I think if you're probably going to have, you look at the Championship and, the teams at the top, the Fulhams and and the Bournemouth, you know, going to get a fair bit of recognition. Forest as well. I think if you sort of had another team, a reserve team, if you like, you'd probably like to think that there'd be even more, you know, Yorkshire-based players. You think of the people, in people such as Tom Lees and, you know, Lewis O'Brien. I think Danny Ward's been outstanding as well for Huddersfield. So, don't forget Sauber Thomas as well. But I suppose there's a hell of a lot of competition for that sort of right-hand side of midfield berth, if you like. Obviously, Jed Spence got the nod, didn't he, on loan from Middlesbrough at Nottingham Forest. Isaiah Jones as well. And then you look at Rotherham as well. As much as the players have got, have rightly got recognition, you look at, you know, some of the others as well. You know, Ollie Rathbones of this world, who's been tremendous. I think Ben Wiles has had a good season as well. I've obviously mentioned the boys at Huddersfield. You'd like to think that Morgan Gibbs-White wasn't a million miles away either. And, you know, even one or two of the Sheffield United defenders. So, you know, as much as it's deserved recognition for the Yorkshire place, based players, you'd like to think that one or two others weren't too far away either.
I think what it says, and it's a bit of a backhanded compliment in some ways, but you know, Huddersfield, one of the best teams in the division, going to finish third or fourth, but don't have that many sort of all singing, all dancing star players. They're a real greater than the sum of their parts team. Luton, exactly the same. You know, the likes of Forest, the likes of Fulham, you know, have more. Probably fair to say more eye-catching players, but you know, Huddersfield are a team you can really rely on to absolutely get the best out of themselves, and that's why, you know, that's why Jones was made the manager, but Corbran equally had a strong blame for that, because it's a lot. I think that's how you should judge the manager of the year, not in terms of, you know, did they win the league, did they win the quadruple in terms of the Premier League manager of the year or whatever, but how much do these teams punch above their weight? You know, and I think Rotherham have done that to a fair extent, and Huddersfield and Luton particularly have done that to a great extent in the Championship, and fair play to them. And really, you know, none of these players... Take Michael Smith for argument's sake. If Michael Smith had won a League One Player of the Year and Rotherham United win promotion, he wouldn't be a happy chappy. It's all about the team accolades, really. So I don't think anybody who's missed out will be losing too much sleep over it, to be perfectly honest.
I mean, to be fair, Stuart, I don't think Paddy McNair can't be that far away, really, you would have thought.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, no, they're all good shouts, Leon. Yeah, I suppose it shows you there is a loss of quality in that division. But yeah, these are all really good players.
And now let's take a look at the Championship. Firstly, we start with Barnsley, whose fate was finally sealed following their defeat at Huddersfield Town. It was followed by the sacking of Poyet Bahi within 48 hours. And another home defeat, this time at the hands of Blackpool. From a playoff spot last season to the drop into League One, this will surely be a huge disappointment for all the Tykes fans, who must be wondering what is now in store for next season. And what do you think their chances are for an immediate return, seeing as League One is already a highly competitive league already, Leon?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, touching on this Bahi, I mean, I did his press conference before the Huddersfield game, and he's a good guy. He's honest. He's always been good to deal with, but he just looked a beaten man. I mean, it was obviously the relegation clause in his deal. I mean, from what I understand, it was more at the club having to decide that, but decide his fate. But he just looked, like I say, looked beaten and ready to go, really, and you know, go back to his native Sweden. It's never easy coming in partway through a season and partway through a season that had been a disastrous opening third of the season for Barnsley. You know, it all started off pretty much in the summer, didn't it? I mean, a horrendous summer in terms of recruitment. Obviously, they got the decision wrong bringing in Marcus Schottmann. You really do feel fear for Barnsley. I mean, there's going to be, you know, quite a few of the big hitters are going to be leaving. You know, you'd probably think four or five, and then maybe some more as well. Obviously, the loan players go back. They're not going to be involved for the rest of the season anyway. And, yeah, I mean, the last time Barnsley got relegated, they made a big sort of play about they didn't bring loads of players in the summer, but what they sort of said, well, we're really investing by keeping the, you know, the better players in the squad, the likes of Kiefer Moore stayed and Ethan Pinnock. Yeah, a few others, Cameron McGinn. And, yeah, I mean, that side, they were a real powerhouse at League One level the following season, and deservedly and reasonably comfortably went straight back up. You know, now there's not going to be a lot left when the main players go, the loan players have gone back. There's obviously a few out of contract will go as well. There's not a great deal there really. And, you know, at the same time, Barnes, they've got to get the next appointment right. They're going to be 6, 7, 8 million down in terms of the budget. So the budget's going to be absolutely slashed, and they'll probably pretty much have to wait for the players to leave to bring players in. And I don't know what Stuart thinks. I'm not convinced that other teams will dive in straight away and sort of say, well, let's, you know, here's 3, 4 million for Helic and Styles or whatever. I think they'll play a bit of poker, wait till Barnsley get pretty desperate. In the meantime, Barnsley have probably got to wait to bring players in. So it's I think that the simple way of putting it is that it's a real mess.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the issues in that regard, Leon, I would excuse Helic from this, but too many of the big hitters haven't been big hitters this season. They haven't really shown what they're capable of. You know, Callum Stiles in particular springs to mind as someone who's had a disappointing season by his own standards. And that in itself is going to ensure that clubs aren't queuing up to buy him at the start of the window. You know, there's clearly talent there. But he's had a disappointed season. I don't think he's going to be at the top of that many shopping lists. So I can see him going, but I can't
see
him going.
Age is a good thing. I don't know what you mean. He's young, isn't he? I suppose.
Yes.
But yeah, he hasn't kicked on, has he, from last season? I know what you're saying.
No, but I think just generally, I think looking at League One this season, you know, you look at Rotherham, you look at Wickham, who may or may not make the playoffs, but are still in the running as we speak. And you know, these are teams that have come down. You all the season before kept the core of the team, have accepted what they are, and just added a couple in the right places and kicked on. You know, as Leon says, Barnes are going to struggle to actually keep the core together and do that. It's going to be difficult. And it's a really, really competitive division. I mean, again, refer to Wickham there. Wickham have got 80 points this season, more than Huddersfield in the Championship, and they might not go up. Such a competitive top end of that division. It's going to be tough for all the teams going down. But especially Barnsley. And, you know, with regards to Bargia, I don't say this as an excuse for him, but you know, he came in November and it already felt like it was a lost cause by then. It just felt that the die had been cast already. And again, I covered the game on Friday against Huddersfield, the game where they went down, and spoke to him after the game, and you know, the asked him at the end of the presser, and he said when you're a club of Barnsley size and budget, you've pretty much got to get every decision right. Yeah. Well, really, over the course of the summer, they weren't far off getting every decision wrong. Yeah. You know, the appointment of Shop in hindsight was not a good one. You know, the signings of people like Alari and Iseka were frankly just wasted money. You know, people like Josh Benson, Claudio Gomez has sort of finished the season reasonably strongly, but nevertheless, when they lost Alex Mowat, they need experience. They got in some young lads. They just made a real mess there. And the whole Barnsley model, I think, I wouldn't say it needs ripping up and starting again, but it's based on life pre-Brexit. And now that the sort of tap markets that Barnsley look to exploit are so much harder to exploit because of the work permit regulations, that means it's much more difficult to bring in these undiscovered talents from the markets they were looking in, both in terms of managers and players. So they need to have a bit of a think about that and get things right. But it doesn't feel to me like this is going to be a quick fix. They can bounce straight back. It feels like it might take a couple of years to take to get their house in order, and that will be more difficult.
Yeah, I think it's not just going to be players, the better players, if you like, leaving as well. I think it's going to be getting rid of some of the mistakes as well. I don't know how the heck they do that. They brought Alari in, obviously, you know, probably one of the most notoriously bad signings that the club have ever sanctioned, really. I mean, I suppose the only other one that really springs to mind off the top of my head is when they brought Mido in. That was a real disaster. Obviously, Alari's come in, he's on big wages, and, you know, it's been an unmitigated disaster. He's gone out on loan to Belgian second division club for the rest of the season, but so in theory he'll come back. And how do you really solve a problem like that when he's obviously on big money? I think Aseka as well, he's done marginally better, but you know, by League One standards, he'll be on big money as well. So it's not just about waiting to see who leaves of the better players. I'm sure that Carlton Morris as well, we've not mentioned him. You'd expect him to get some sort of level of decent interest in the Championship as well. But, you know, it's getting Aseka and Ilari, really. So it's, you know, they were signing sanctioned by Paul Conway, it has to be said, who obviously was a... There was a spell, there was a bit of a backing with Barnsley last summer when Dane Murphy left. You know, currently the chief exec didn't start until September. So it was that, you know, summer period where the decision to bring in Shop obviously massively backfired, and recruitment was atrocious, and you know, they spent some fair sums as well. So yeah, a real mess to sort out.
And the players who have given encouragement at the end of the season have largely been on loan players as well. So of course they won't be them either. You know, it's I mean, with regards to Morris, it's interesting. It's noticeable a couple of times now in Middlesbrough press conferences since they played Barnsley. Chris Wilder has mentioned how well Carl Morris, who has been another one of the late season successes, how well he played up against Dale Fry. So I wouldn't be gobsmacked, particularly if Middlesbrough don't go up, if there isn't a bid from the Riverside coming for Carlton Morris.
He can play in the three as well. Yeah, I mean, he can play up top as a nine, but he can play in a three on the left as well. So yeah, he's got versatility. Hmm.
Yeah.
And next, we turn our attention to Huddersfield Town, who confirmed their playoff spot with a 2-1 win over Barnsley, and now seem to be battling Notts Forest for third place. With games against Coventry and Bristol City, Carlos Corberan will surely be hoping for 6 points, wouldn't you say, Stuart?
It's yes. I mean, obviously he will. It's one of those. It's always an interesting, slightly difficult one for the first team to qualify for the playoffs, in that you want to keep your foot down so as not to lose momentum. And at the same time, you've got to nurse a few bodies through, because inevitably, by the end of the season, people are a bit battered and bruised. But yeah, you just don't want to take your eye off the ball. You want to go into the playoffs with a bit of momentum. And it's about motivating them to do that. However, Carlos Corberan goes about that. I mean, I suppose Bournemouth are them ever so slightly by by dropping a few points to get a couple of people dreaming about top two, but they're probably too far away realistically for that to sort of motivate too many players. It's all, as I say, just about framing it in terms of, look, we don't want to limp into the playoffs. We want to go in good form. But it's been an absolute, say obviously some of the praises earlier, it's been an absolutely tremendous season for Huddersfield. It would be nice to see them finish it off with at the very least a couple of good performances, and then go on into the playoffs in good spirits. Because I've heard a few Huddersfield fans and non-Huddersfield fans talking about who they'd like to avoid, who they'd like to beat to face in the playoffs. Well, they've actually beaten all the teams they can face over the course of the season. They shouldn't really fear anyone. They shouldn't have that mindset. They should be just foot down and we'll take whatever's thrown at us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be the other. You know, if I was another team in the playoffs, I'd be thinking I don't want to play Huddersfield. I mean, the game management's been excellent all season. They're a team in every sense of the word. Obviously, there's the record that Stuart mentions, and to beat Huddersfield over two legs or a one off at Wembley, you know you're gonna have to empty the tank. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what he does in these final games. I mean, I remember obviously in the the David Wagner promotion. It was probably similar. They qualified. Memory serves, it was a few games before the end. I think they won at Wolves, and then he rested a few people to get them, you know, fully ready and recharged for the playoffs. Obviously, they played Sheffield Wednesday. It'd be interesting if they got Sheffield United this time, wouldn't it? But they shared the load, and that's been the story of Huddersfield this season, the Corberon, isn't it? You know, contributions all over the place. There's been no panic when somebody's injured. Matty Pearson's been injured. Naby Sarr comes in. Danny Ward's been out for a few games. Jordan Rhodes has come in and done. You know, he arguably had his best game for the club, didn't he, against Middlesbrough? And you just wonder if you're tempted to keep him in because, you know, he's really getting his confidence back. He's in the goals a little bit, just to maybe keep playing him. But there's just been no panic, has there, really? You know, somebody's come out and somebody else has come in, and you can imagine Carlos Corberan's there with a little checklist of, you know, in terms of the physical data of, you know, players unmatched. I know he's big on, you know, really, really big on that, and managing him in that aspect. And I'm sure he'll do that to make sure everyone is really fully mentally and physically ready for I suppose it's not like a new season, but it's, you know, this season will end and a new mini-season will begin. And I really do think Huddersfield have got a very good chance. And if I was one of the rivals, they'd be probably the team I'd be wanting to avoid. If they played somebody like Forest as well, even at Wembley, I mean, there'd be a lot of pressure on Forest, wouldn't there? They've got this, you know, a lot of the talk is how long has it been since they've been in the Premier League. You know, and Huddersfield are a side who can really do a job on teams.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you were to say even a couple of weeks ago, you know, who are the Huddersfield players you least want injured as you're trying to wrap up promotion? You know, Pearson and Ward would have been high on that list, and they've just brushed it aside, you know. And as you say, I'm in total agreement. I would keep Rhodes and Sarr in the team because they've made life easier. They've made it easier to rest players with the quality of their performances. You know, there's Pippa as well. There are players on the fringes standing up, and that's just kind of been the story of Huddersfield season. You know, you can have better players than Huddersfield, you can play better than Huddersfield, but even then you might not beat Huddersfield because they just find a way from somewhere, whether it's set pieces or counter-attacking. They've got great spirits. You know, they've got people on the fringes who are really stepping up, and as you say, that's why they're so fearful. You know, I would say that Nottingham Forest on a really good day, you know, probably possibly none of the other teams could touch, but they have more bad days than Huddersfield. Huddersfield have a real consistency. It's almost like a machine now. You know, he's got 11 players. He can chuck them into any formation he chooses, almost, it seems, and they just get on with it. They know what they want to do, and they're just a really well-built, well-coached team who, as Leon says, anyone with any common sense would be saying, let's avoid Huddersfield if it's all possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just wonder, Stuart, just quickly, if they might have a look at Andrew in these last few games. He's obviously
coming
from Chelsea, hasn't he? And he's obviously coming off an injury at his previous club on loan. It looks to me that it might be a nice time to, you know, get some match minutes, you know, into him, because obviously he came to Huddersfield with a bit of a rap. People were talking about how he was, you know, pretty well regarded at Chelsea. And you know, if they can get some impact from him, you know, going into the playoffs, he might be an option from the bench, an interesting one.
Mm. Yeah, and it seems less likely if they could see a few glimpses of the Carolighting of last season as well. Then that's the same, yeah.
And next we turn our attention to Middlesbrough, whose challenge unfortunately suttered again with a 1-1 draw at Swansea. The result actually saw them climb into 8th place, 5 points outside the top 6, but without a win in the last 5 games, they still have a game in hand over their immediate rivals. But do Chris Wilder's team still have a realistic chance of reaching those playoffs, Leon?
I wouldn't say realistic. They have probably have an outside chance, really. I mean, you know, other things have got to go right for them. You know, or from a Sheffield United perspective, wrong for them. I mean, you know, you look at Middlesbrough. I think they've made great strides under Chris Wilder. They've got an established way of playing. It's pleasing on the eye, but you know, the problem has been, all season, it's been goal scoring, hasn't it? And I think whatever happens this season, that's going to be the, you know, the big issue. They've got, I think, the 5 strikers have scored something like, I think it's only about 25 goals. And you look at how many, you know, Mitrovic has scored on his own at Fulham. You know, they'll have 3 strikers who will go back to the respective clubs in Spora, Connolly and Balogun. And Spora's gone off the boil in the second half of the season, and Connolly's turned out to be a really underwhelming signing, and apart from one or two flashes from Balogun, there's not been too much. So, you know, that's the issue there. And you know, obviously the home form as well, which had been so strong, has sort of tailed off a little bit. So yeah, they have a slight chance, but you know, they're gonna have to really hit the straps and rely on other teams, you know, faltering. It, you know, really is in Sheffield United's hands at the minute.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, all the teams competing for promotion, or almost all of them, have got somebody scoring those goals. You know, Daddy Ward's not a glamorous name when you put him alongside the likes of Mitrovic and Solanke, who've played so many Premier League games. But they, you know, they've got 13 goals out of him. You know, Luton have managed to get 15 out of Adebayo, and it's just a glaring omission in the Middlesbrough squad. Yeah. To say, it's so obvious that's what they need to have needed to find and haven't been able to. But you know, they've. It's still available to them, you know, at this late stage of the season, which when you consider what things were like when Neil Warnock left, is, I suppose, something to be grateful for. But it's just disappointing, because it did feel in sort of January, February, March as though they had this unstoppable momentum and they were definitely going to make the playoffs.
It's Forrest and the team who've really surged, hasn't it? People were talking about, you know, Forrest and Middlesbrough in a similar breath a few months ago, weren't they? But they've both had good runs in the FA Cup as well. But Forrest have been the team who've powered on, and Yeah, you just look at the goal scoring. They haven't got a scorer in double figures yet. Have they brought him in? You know, the top scorer is Matt Crooks. I think he's got 9, hasn't he? And he's currently suspended. So, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to deduce what the main thrust of recruitment will be for Middlesbrough in the summer. Although, that said, I think they'll need to sort out the goalkeeping situation once and for all as well.
Mm. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And next, we turn our attention to Sheffield United, where there has been a fair amount going on. Firstly, with their form on the pitch, their win against Cardiff City leaves them in the playoff places. And off the pitch, a deal has been struck that would see American Henry Morris take over the club, subject to the EFL's owners and directors test. The Blades have taken up the option to extend Billy Sharp's contract, and with the last game of the season against champions Fulham, can they stay in that top six, Stuart?
Well, I mean, in some ways, we could have been saying similar things about Sheffield United because they have a goal scorer in Billy Sharp. He's probably the only real put your mortgage on him finisher that they've got, and he got injured in March's international break. He's just coming back now, and it might be at just the right time because I think had they not had him for the running, even though Illiman and Dyes stepped up with 2 goals in the last 3 games, I think you would be worried. I think the fact that he's back in amongst the squad now, psychologically as much as anything else, it is a big boost. But you know they've still got to see it out. I mean, again, they fall into a similar category to Nottingham Forest and Middlesbrough just without the FA Cup run, and they've given everyone a big head start. They had a real surge around the turn of the year, and they've had a lot of injuries. You know, you wonder how much that all that physical effort, because they play at a real intensity as well, has caught up with them in the last few weeks. And as they had Billy Sharp been ruled out for the season, you would have really feared for them. But as it is, with him back in the running, hopefully we're going to be saying that although they wobbled, they just managed to sort of hold it together just enough to get over the line. It will be a case of that rather than anything else if it happens. But looking a bit more optimistic after their win at the weekend.
Mm. Yeah, I think they've probably benefited as well, Stuart, from one or two other teams having wobbles as well. I mean, the likes of Borough, we've spoken about them, you know, Blackburn as well, even though they've obviously got a big result on Monday, so they've got a little bit of a chance again. But it's almost like Sheffield United's hobble hasn't been quite as bad as other teams, and they're still
exactly
there. You sort of look at, you know, the players there, you rightly say Billy Sharp, but you know, there's some senior players who were there at the obviously that pivotal point, a few seasons ago when they got over the line to get automatic promotion. You know, the likes of, you know, John Egan, you know, the Bashams of this world, John Flett, really senior, experienced players, and they're going to be, you know, massively important if the Blades do qualify and then, you know, hopefully push on. I think it was quite clever what Paul Aguibon did with the Dye as well. He sort of took him a little bit. He'd got a lot of plaudits this season, a breakthrough season for him. And, you know, he just took him out a little bit of the firing line, didn't he? And gave him a little bit of a few words, a bit of a reality check, if you like. And obviously he's had a nice response with the goal against Cardiff. So that seemed to be quite clever man management. But, yeah, I mean, like I say, Sheffield United, in the main, they're an experienced squad who know this, know the championship, and yeah, those are the right sort of players in these testing circumstances in the last few games. It's going to be a tense night at QPR on Friday. Although if the Middlesbrough result goes United's way, it might take a little bit of pressure off. But you know, don't forget about Blackburn and Millwall as well.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, within that, and I was in the post-match press conference. I forget which one it was actually, a few weeks ago, when he was asked why wasn't Dye not in the team at the moment, and we got the straight answer: he's not been good enough. Yeah. You know, he's been he's been blunt. He's been what you expect of Paul Heckingbottom, street talking Yorkshireman. There's been a bit of tough love, and he's known how to manage and die. And you know the thing about Heckingbottom is having been the under-23 coach as well. He knows the personality of some of these younger players. I think he knows the personality of some of the senior players, just having been around the building, and he knows how to manage them. And you know, you rightly talk about the experience, you know, the promotion experience a lot of that squad has, and it's very important. But Heckingbottom's got playoff experience too, as well, of course, with Barnsley and others. And yeah, you do feel that that is the big card in Sheffield United's pack. If they do get into the playoffs, the fact that they've been the course and distance, you would hope from their perspective would be a big advantage. It's just getting over the line, and as you say, that last place is just going to be decided by who hobbles the least over the line, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you have any sort of views or comments with regards to the news about the potential takeover?
I think more investment is needed in that club. You're always optimistic when you hear about a new investor in a football club, but always a little bit unsure as well as to how it's going to pan out. I mean, there's often talk about, oh, you know, this new owner is worth X million or billion pounds, but it doesn't always translate into this new owner is prepared to actually throw all of that money at the football club. So we'll have to wait and see. But it does feel as though Prince Abdullah's just been caught a little bit short since he come in. He is one who, you know, his value on paper is huge, but it feels like he's not been prepared to really put the investment into Sheffield United that they have needed. It was obviously, you know, a big cause of grievance with Chris Wilder in the second season in the Premier League, and was a factor in his departure. I mean, some people would say that Paul Heckingbottom was an appointment done on the cheap, and you know, if that's the case, then it's worked out well for them, because he's proved to be a very good appointment, regardless of whether he's a glamorous name or not. But going forward, there's been all this, you know, dragging of heels about extending the contracts of senior players. It does feel like that club needs a bit of injection of cash, and, you know, to a degree, positivity in terms of the way things are run off the field. So hopefully Morris can provide that. But it does seem like this deal has been in the works a long time, and it's taken a while for the Football League to run their background checks on him. So hopefully that is just the Football League being a bit slow and being really diligent and not anything to be too concerned about.
No. And next we turn our attention to League One, and it's now clear what our local teams need to do on the last day of the season. After conceding an early own goal, Rotherham came back to beat Oxford United before a 1-1 draw away at Sunderland. With the final game of the season away at relegation-threatened Gillingham, the Millers know that a win will guarantee automatic promotion. What have you made of their recent run of form, Leon?
Yeah, well, obviously they held the nerve on Saturday, deservedly beat Oxford. I know that Stuart went to the game the previous Saturday against Ipswich, and I think it was probably similarities in the respect that, you know, Rotherham were terrific in the first half, but, you know, they really upped it in the second half, and, you know, were more in character, that, you know, an intensity, you know, physically strong. Great mentality, got over the line, and they did that against Oxford, and, you know, deservedly won. But it just so shattering what happened at the end at Sunderland on Tuesday night. You just really, really did feel for them. They were just a couple of minutes away from effectively, you know, sealing automatic promotion. And you know, we mentioned Michael Ikewi, you know, earlier. He got in the team of the year, and, you know, it almost looked like perfect few days for him. He put Rotherham, you know, deservedly in the lead at Sunderland, and they went on to dominate 88 minutes. Really, they were sort of out muscled, out witted, out run
Sunderland, who were desperately disappointing, you know, for a side who had, I think they were unbeaten in 11. I'm not sure when the last home defeat was, but they've taken 50 points at home this season, which is a, you know, staggering total. But they totally negated Sunderland and bettered Sunderland. And yeah, they were so close. And then the poor old Ikeri obviously put the cross from Jack Clark into his own net. So I just, you know, afterwards there was obviously Paul Warne, as he does, fronted up, and you know, he couldn't say anything more, that there was a, you know, a devastating moment, and they will feel sore for you know, probably, you know, probably 24 hours a day, but they've got to move on very, very quickly, and the fate is still in their hands. I mean, if they, you know, if they win at Gillingham, they're automatically promoted. But there's a few different scenarios as well. They could even, you know, lose and be promoted. You know, the thing is, you know, the big game is going to be at Plymouth, where obviously MK Dons are there, and you know, everyone, all the Millers fans at Gillingham and at home will be just as intently watching that happens in that game as they do at Gillingham, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're just really on a human level. You fell for them, because I was at Cardiff last season when Rotherham got got relegated, and it was, you know, similar events. It was actually the 88th minute, bizarrely, as well, when Cardiff got that equaliser to send them down. So yeah, on a human level, you really did feel for, you know, a really good set of characters, along with alongside being good players and great management team. You know, we've spoken many times about Paul Warne, but if you had to say something, it's that after the game at Cardiff, that was it. They were done. But now at least they've got, as painfully as it'll feel in the aftermath of what happened at Sunderland, they've still got another chance, and you know, it's in their hands. And if they do manage to get promoted on Saturday, then they'll forget about what happened at Sunderland in midweek.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredible final day, really, when you think that Rotherham could win the league or could miss out on promotion altogether. You know, and as I alluded to earlier, you could have a team with 80, maybe even 81 points, not even make the playoffs. You know, and you're right, Mark. On the one hand, it is very simple for Rotherham and Sheffield Wednesday: win the games, job done. But you know, Leon and I, in the early hours of Wednesday morning, were going through various permutations as to what could and couldn't happen. Exactly, it's going to be a real get the calculator, because even the goal difference is so tight for the playoff teams. But anyway, with regards to Rotherham, you know, Paul Warne, the psychologist, is going to have to do a really good job this week, because it's you know, it's one of those games where, Tuesday was one of those games where, as Leon said, by all accounts, there was 88 minutes of really good stuff from Rotherham and 2 minutes of bad stuff. And it's human nature that you focus on the 2 minutes of bad stuff. They need to really, you know, remember how good they were for those 88 minutes. You know, they can still do this, essentially. You know, they definitely can still do this. If you'd have said to them after game one, you know, they'd be in this position where they could win the title after game 45, they would have taken that, you know. And they do just have to focus on the positives, because, you know, they are good enough to get the job done, but they just have to have their heads right, have to hold their nerve, might have to have a bit of luck somewhere along the line. But they can't be... They can't dwell on the negatives of, you know, one of those draws that felt like a defeat. They've got to get it out of their system quickly, because, you know, any hangover could be very costly. Because, as I've said to you in previous podcasts, Mark, I wouldn't fancy the chances of any team that dropped into the playoffs under those circumstances. So, you know, like Sheffield United, it might be a case of hobbling over the line. But if you hobble over the line into the top two, you're up. There's no sort of downside to that. It's job done. They've just got to get the job done.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. You've just got to be. It's keeping the spirits high, isn't it? And you know, even as obviously desperately disappointing as it was, I think before the game, you know, Rotherham might have have taken a draw, really. It's just the circumstance that it happened, isn't it? It could have been the other way around, where Rotherham were losing 1-0 and then scored right at the death. So it's just the game the way that the game panned out. I mean, part of me beforehand was thinking, well, what would actually happen if, say, Sunderland were 2-0 up after an hour? Would Rotherham just really shut up shop then and say, well, we're not conceding anymore? Because then, in theory, Sunderland could have had a little sniff on the last day of even the top two. But yeah, it's just been an epic and such an interesting race, hasn't it, for the top two and the playoffs. But I think what I would, going back to Paul, what I probably would illustrate is the fact that, you know, this time last season that happened at Cardiff, didn't it, and that was it. Now it's not it. They've still got another chance, and I think in the you know, the players will be low. You know, especially, you know, those players, and there's a lot of them who were involved in what happened at Cardiff. I'm no psychological expert, and Paul Warren's, he's big on all that sort of thing, and he's much more equipped than I am. But maybe he'll factor some of that in, just to say, look, you know, at Cardiff we were dead and buried. This time we've had another real punishing late developments, but we've got another chance ultimately.
Yeah.
And they did lift themselves up after Cardiff, obviously over a much longer period of time. But when you go down in those circumstances, you can easily start the next season poorly. He managed to turn that around. The difference is this time he'd only got a couple of days to do it. But they've got it within themselves. I just hope they can do it.
Yeah. And they're playing a side under massive pressure as well, Stuart, aren't they, as well? And I think hopefully that, in a funny sort of way, that's probably better than playing a team with just nothing to play for, almost, who can just have a bit of fun and try and spoil things. Let's not forget that Gillingham are going to be desperate and every bit as much under pressure as Rotherham, probably more so. I mean, Rotherham, whatever happens, there is the playoffs, isn't there? But, you know, factoring as well that it's going to be really tense for Gillingham supporters as well.
And despite a disappointing loss to playoff rivals Wycombe Wanderers, Sheffield Wednesday responded with a 3-2 win against Fleetwood Town, leaving a playoff spot in their own hands with their final game against Portsmouth. What do you make of their recent run, and how do you see them going into that game against Portsmouth, Stuart?
Well, they don't half put you through it, do they?
Yes.
They were cruising for the first 15 minutes of that game. Lee Gregory scored in front of the away fans. The sun was out. It was happy days. You know, it was going to be a piece of cake playing against a relegation-threatened team on a terrible pitch. But you just feel with this Sheffield Wednesday team. I mean, we talked last week about the Lincoln defeat. You just feel that every now and then. They just need a good kick up the backside.
Yep.
Because they get themselves into good positions, and they just feel too comfortable. You know, they went from that 1-0 up, they conceded two really poor goals, gifted two really poor goals, you know, in the first half. And Darren Moore said he had to give them a real rollicking at half-time, which is not something he often... It's not something, A, you associate with him, and not something he puts in the public domain very often when it happens. But Lee Gregory certainly backed it up, used a few more, a few spicier words as to how things were in the dressing room. But you just feel that's a flaw in this Wednesday side. Now, you know, I mentioned that to Moore after the game, and he sort of agreed with me that just sometimes they just get a bit complacent almost, and it feels a bit too easy for them. And they do need these reminders, and you know, unfortunately for them, over the course of the season, they've had quite a habit of getting these reminders in sort of the 88th minute of the game, where it's a bit late to do anything about it. Mm. But hopefully, I say the way that game panned out, I mean, all's well that ends well. Lee Gregory pulled them out of the mire, got, you know, a really good hat trick, and you know, got them feeling good about themselves again. Hopefully that was their kick up the backside for Saturday, because it is all there for them now. Again, as we said about Rotherham, if you'd have said to them, come game 46, all you have to do is win in front of Hillsborough, which will be by all accounts very close, if not actually sold out. You know, it's going to be a big crowd, which means a lot of expectation, but at least every, you know, almost everyone in that ground is going to be on their side. It's about focus. You know, after Wickham, the two buzzwords Moore used were concentration and composure. And as they conceded those two goals on Tuesday night, the two things they were missing was concentration and composure. They really need to just get their minds straight, focus for 90 minutes, because it's there for them. And we, you know, we know what a footballing disaster it will be for Sheffield Wednesday if they miss out on the playoffs. But it's, you know, it's so tight, it will happen if they're not properly on it. If they are, you know, they've got what they need to get over the line.
Yeah, they're just going to have to sharpen up. You're right, Stuart. I mean, you sort of think about, you know, for all the, you know, the good aspects of Sheffield Wednesday season, they've conceded a lot of sloppy goals, haven't they, as well? You know, set-piece goals and, you know, they've been really down to, you know, a slack decision or concentration, really. And obviously in this game against Portsmouth, it's going to have to be absolutely spot on, isn't it? And I think it's one of those. I mean, obviously Wednesday have got an outstanding home record, but the dangerous opponents, Portsmouth, you know, you look at them, they obviously beat Wigan in midweek. I think they beat Rotherham, didn't they, a few weeks ago as well. Beat them 3-0, so they've got some. They're probably having a little bit of one of those sides who've still got some decent players capable of having a little bit of fun and spoiling the fun of others at this stage of the season. So they're going to have to, you know, no mistakes and everything. You know, they've got to be very, very disciplined and organised and, you know, mentally strong, concentration, all that sort of thing. And, yeah, and I echo what Stuart said earlier. I mean, it's just such a fascinating final day, isn't it, in League One? I mean, and, you know, the games as well are, you know, it's pitting sides at the top against teams at the bottom. We've got Gillingham against Rotherham. Sunderland go to Morecambe. There's obviously the other game at the top, the Plymouth MK Dons. And then a lot of people will be looking at the game involving Wickham, who are the team who could really spoil it for a few there. I think they're going to, Burton, I think, isn't it? So, you know, it's just a script if you're a neutral or, you know, it's a neutral football fan following those games will be fascinating. Or if you support those teams, you'll just be biting your fingernails, won't you?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, turn the volume down for a couple of seconds, Sheffield Wednesday fans. But what Portsmouth have also got, of course, is George Hurst.
He's got four
goals in his last five games. You know, all four of those games have scored three, and then of course he's the son of David Hurst. So that's a nightmare script that could be written. Obviously, there's a very positive one as well in terms of them getting the job done. But yeah, there's absolutely no excuse to not be 100% concentrated now. As you said, Mark, they know what they need to do. They know there's no second chance. They know everyone's breathing down their neck. They know it could even go down to goals scored on the last day, I suppose, you know, with some of the scenarios. They just need to hold their concentration, because at times this season they're not showing the best of themselves, but it'll all be forgotten if they get the job done.
Exactly.
It's just a big wrap for League One as well, isn't it? Everybody talks about how great the championship is, and it is great, but what a brilliant season it's been in League One this season as well.
Oh, definitely.
And I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big fan of the playoffs just because of the unfairness of it, but it doesn't half make for some brilliant drama. We'd be having none of these conversations now without the playoffs, so it certainly has its upsides.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. And next we turn to Doncaster Rovers, whose stay in League One is almost certain to end despite winning their final home game of the season against Burton Albion. Without a quite remarkable series of events, Donny will be in League Two next season. Do you think that they will be able to make that immediate return, Leon?
I think they've got to do a lot of work in the summer. I mean, there's going to be a lot of players out of contract, and you know, with any team that gets relegated, there's going to be consequences and a turnover of players. And we've spoken about it a few times. I mean, you look at, you know, Doncaster's form now, really, and I think, you know, they're taking 7 points from 12, and It's decent, and you know Gary McSheffield can be happy with that. But they've sort of done it when it, I wouldn't say it doesn't really matter, but when they've really sort of pretty much been relegated, haven't they? You know, he was doing it in those games before when the pressure's really on, and you've got to show your character and the wherewithal. That's something that they haven't done all season. So you know, I wouldn't be too fooled, if you like, by the recent form, even though it, you know, it is nice that they're not sort of heading into League Two with a whimper, and they've had one or two, you know, okay results. But yeah, they've got to sort out the, I'm not saying it's a bad dressing room, but there's not enough leaders and authority there, and that's going to be the big thing for me. They've got Tommy Rowe, and it's hard to think of one, you know, too many more really. Or it's encouraging at least to see that Adam Clayton is showing it, grasping the nettle, if you like. He's had a slow, you know, he's a senior player. He's had a slow start to his career at Doncaster, so it's encouraging that he's getting into a little bit of a rhythm. But there's just so much to do. I mean, obviously they made the appointment with James Croppinger, a club legend. He's going to be the head of football operations, and that's with respect to James. He hasn't, you know, he's going to be a rookie, and he hasn't got experience of a role like that in the past. He's only relatively recently finished his playing career, so there's going to be a hell of a lot on his plate, and there's going to be, you know, pressure on him and others to get things right in terms of, you know, primarily the recruitment, because you do look at Doncaster after the season that they've had, and the first thing is just levelling off and just getting some stability and just getting a bit more of a confidence and a, you know, regularity in terms of more consistent results, really, in terms of wins, because, you know, you just worry that they've not bottomed out yet.
I just think you're both being extremely negative, writing off a 27-0 win for Doncaster on Saturday and everything else that needs to go their way. But no, seriously, I think Leon's hit the nail on the head with the word authority. You know, they need to have a more authoritative look about them next season, because, you know, I'm a big fan of clubs bringing through young players. I think that's the right way for clubs at all levels to go. But you do need a bit of experience around them. And, you know, we were saying before Coppinger's appointment, Leon and I, we were both hopeful it was going to be someone experienced who could help a rookie manager and his rookie team. And that isn't the case. So they will have to compensate with some more on-field experience and leadership, because there just isn't enough of that within that football club at the moment, I'm afraid. And that's a big reason why they've gone down. I firmly believe that's a big factor in why they haven't, as Leon says, they haven't won the games that mattered. The fact that they've won some of the games when it's been too late, and, you know, you mentioned before about Sunderland's home record, they won at Sunderland, for example. They have got ability, but it's about more than just ability, you know, and you need when you're bringing through young players, you need some guidance around them, whether that be in the dugout or on the field, and there just isn't enough of that at the moment. Clayton will be important. Tommy Rowe, if he stays, I mean, he certainly doesn't deserve to play in League Two the season he's had, but we know he loves that club, so we'll wait and see. Obviously, losing Tom Anderson for half of the season was huge in that respect, but they do need some senior figures who can not just guide these players, but actually help Gary McSheffrey out. You know, there's no shame in that. I'm sure Paul Heckingbottom is getting a lot of help from his senior players at the moment, and he is a manager with some experience. You know, they just need a bit more of that nous, a bit more of that experience within the club, and that's why, you know, I'm a big fan of James Coppinger, the person. I really hope he does well. Obviously, pretty much everyone who supports Doncaster Rovers is a big fan of James Coppinger. But it didn't feel like the right appointment for the people around them. I really hope that when we're doing this podcast next year, I'm humbly apologising for being proven completely wrong. But they are going to have to compensate elsewhere.
Mm. Yeah.
And finally for this week, we turn to the Premier League and Leeds United, who came away from Selhurst Park with a gritty and, well, unattractive point against Crystal Palace. With the other results at the bottom and a home game against Manchester City coming up next, things are still incredibly tight. How would you judge their most recent performance and their prospects over the next few games, Stuart?
Well, unattractive is a nail being hit on the head there in terms of that last performance. And don't forget, as you say, it is Manchester City next and Burnley play at Watford first. Could be above them in the table by then. But it's not just Manchester City. It's then Chelsea. It's then Arsenal. This is the tough time. You know, Jesse Marsh has got quite fortunate in terms of the sequence of fixtures. Marcelo Bielsa finished with a horror run of opponents. Marsh has started with a pretty benign run, but now it's payback time in terms of the games. I just feel like I feel conflicted with Leeds because on the one hand, I feel the way they're playing is not very good. I don't mean in terms of entertainment value. I just mean in terms of it's very, I mean, the entertainment value isn't great, but that's not the point. It's not the most sophisticated way of playing. I can't see it being very successful in the long run because if you know, the Premier League's full of really good coaches, you know, and if they manage to work Marcelo Bielsa's way of playing out in a year, it's not going to take them a year to work out Leeds' way of playing, unless it develops further. That's obviously the challenge. And you know, the big disappointment from Palace was that it came on the back of 16 days of training ground work when they actually had all their internationals at full parch. You know, this was an opportunity to come out and say, we've really developed from that Watford performance, which, although they won that 3-0, wasn't that great either. It's just that Watford were really poor. But, you know, the other side of it is, Jesse Marsh is still new in this job. He's unbeaten in 5 games. He's kept back-to-back clean sheets, which, you know, they were a long, long way away from when they were chipping goals left, right and centre at the end of Marcelo Bielsa's reign. Progress has been made, but they need to make a lot more progress. And Marsh is conscious of it because he's talking in his press conferences about how they need to be better in possession. They need to play better. But that leap is going to have to come. Maybe not even to stay up this season, but to prosper next season. The way they're playing at the moment, they play such a frantic brand of football that it forces a lot of mistakes from the opposition. But it's forcing a lot of mistakes from themselves as well, because whereas Bielsa's team were quite good at playing at 100 miles an hour, but still playing quite accurately at times anyway, the way that Marsh is playing, they really just need someone at times to put the foot on the ball. And they, you know, they've got players who can do that, but they're just not being able to often enough. That's where they've got to get to. But as I say, you know, when you look at sort of the way things were when Marsh came in, you've got to give him some credit for the points they've picked up so far.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's ultimately when you get down to brass tacks, it's just about Leeds, you know, staying up this season, is it? That's the first primary consideration. That's why Marsh was brought in. And the performance against Crystal Palace, it was almost as if, like, you know, hopefully three teams are going to be worse than us, but they did get something from it. They've obviously got, you know, three really, really tough games coming up, you know, City, Arsenal and Chelsea. But I do think, obviously, rightly so, given the standard of football that there's been a joy to watch for the, you know, overwhelming majority of the Marcelo Bielsa era, Leeds fans have been, you know, there's a standard of play that they expect, but ultimately, at the minute, it's realism, isn't it? It's smell the coffee. It's Leeds United who've had a very difficult second season in the Premier League. It's about them staying up, isn't it? And at the end of the season, looking at that table, and Leeds aren't in the bottom three, and all the other discourse at the minute is a little bit superfluous for me. They've just got to stay up, and then obviously then consider the future. But hopefully they can nick something from one of these next three games with a bit of luck.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, if you play the way Leeds are playing at the moment, you've got to get results. But for the last five games, they've got results. It is just the fear of what's looming over the horizon. But you know, Chelsea have chucked in a few surprise defeats recently. I wouldn't write off the next three games as they're definitely not going to get any points. There are big pressures on Arsenal and Manchester City because of Liverpool and Spurs, you know, breathing down their necks for various places. So don't rule it out. But you know, really, the big work's got to come in the summer, as Leon says. It's just a matter of getting to the summer and still being able to sew that Premier League badge on your arm. And if they do that,
it's job done, isn't it, Leon? I was just going to say quickly that, you know, at the end, what if you were a Leeds United fan, what would you have wanted on Monday? Leeds could have had a scintillating late in performance and lost, or a scrappy, ugly performance and get a point, you know, and I think most pragmatists would probably say the latter, wouldn't they, really?
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wobtrall, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at www.yorkshirepost.co.uk/sport. Or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@jpimedia.co.uk. As ever, many thanks for listening, look after yourselves, and bye for now.